This episode of TopCast is brought to you by UCF Online. 20-plus years of award-winning online excellence, 75-plus online programs, one of the largest and most innovative universities in the U.S., ucf.edu/online.
From the University of Central Florida's Center for Distributed Learning, I'm Tom Cavanaugh.
And I'm Kelvin Thompson.
And you are listening to TopCast, the teaching online podcast. How's it going, Kelvin?
Oh, it's wonderful, Tom. It's just wonderful just to be here with you in this little closet.
Yeah, because the aesthetics are wonderful in here.
That's right.
We have occasionally posted a picture.
That's right.
So some people can see our little home here where we record.
That's right.
It's better than just, you know, sit in any old place. Though we actually have a dedicated room for it, which is nice.
That's right. And a thermos.
And a thermos. Speaking of which, What is in the thermos today, Dr. Thompson?
Well, you know, I'm going to let this offering speak for itself. We're going to have a little
ventriloquism,
little ambient pouring sound here, a verisimilitude of the content du jour. You ready?
Yeah. Do we want to do it near the microphone here?
Sure.
Okay. I don't think I'll be adding my creamer to this one.
I think it's built in already.
Yeah.
I think it's built in already. So what you've got here in your cup, Tom, is coffee nut M&Ms.
Oh, wow. Okay.
My first time tasting them, actually.
I will eat one, but I have to say one of my giant pet peeves is listening to people chew in my ears.
Mm-hmm. I got you. I guess it has some sort of like coffee with cream kind of taste, right?
Yeah.
I mean, when you kind of get past the...
Actually, I kind of like that.
That's not bad. This is new to me.
I'm a big M&M fan.
So is that right?
Uh-huh. I almost can't go wrong.
It was our buddy John Pizzo brought these in the other day. He said, see if you can put these together in a TopCast episode.
Don't challenge us, Pizzo.
That's right. So here's the thing. So here's a different kind of coffee delivery system, Tom, made up of little parts, little pieces that all fold up together new. Now, would it meet everybody's definition of coffee?
Perhaps
I don't know.
Not.
But, you know, it's got coffee right there in the title, and it tastes like coffee.
And it may fill you up like coffee.
And it may fill you up like coffee. So, you know, who can say? Who can say? So I'll leave it to you to make a connection between this offering and today's topic, but see if you can.
I think I get it. Maybe we should just leave it up to the audience.
Okay.
So for today, we have decided to talk about something that's very topical, and who knows, maybe by the time you listen to this, depending upon when you listen to it, there may be more to know about this topic, but at this point, it's sort of in the middle of the story.
Yeah, we don't usually, we try to be a little more evergreen and big picture, and we might zoom in a little bit, but stay broad. This is for us, this is very time-based.
It is. So for those of you in the distance learning world, it's been hard to miss the news surrounding the Department of Education's Office of Inspector General's findings on Western Governors University. And, you know, basically they found them not in compliance with certain regulations. And I can even sort of read the findings that you have so generously excerpted for me. So the DOE's Office of Inspector General found, we concluded that Western Governors University did not comply with the institutional eligibility requirements that limits the percentage of regular students who may enroll in correspondence courses. Therefore, and this is the big news, the department should require the school to return the $712 million in Title IV funds it received from July 1, 2014 through June 30th, 2016, and any additional funds it received after June 30, 2016. Mm-hmm. So anytime a university president sees a note from the government that, by the way, you owe us back $712.6 million.
Goodness gracious.
Somebody might say, what?
Yeah, at least that.
Yeah, so the foundation Now, I think we can caveat all of this by mm-hmm. saying you and I are not experts.
No.
There are others who've done some analyses. We will
yes.
link to all of those.
Absolutely.
WCET and Russ Poulin, and we'll talk about Van Davis from Blackboard, have done a really good job.
Yes.
Phil Hill has done a good
yep.
job of analyzing. So go to those locations to find more information. We're going to sort of just skim along the surface.
This may be the jumbo version of show notes for this episode.
Yeah, exactly, because there's an awful lot to try to understand.
Yep.
And if you're like me, you have people on campus. I had a dean ask me the other day, what's up with Western governors and what kind of exposure do we have? And I had to kind of run through the whole thing with him at a high level.
Mm-hmm.
So at a high level, what the Department of Education found was that, at least their opinion, is that Western governors did not have the kind of substantive interaction between students mm-hmm. and faculty that it expects. And as a result, they classified it as correspondence school.
Mm-hmm.
And as a correspondence school, it's not eligible, at least for those courses where they couldn't determine what they called substantive interaction.
Right.
It was like 60-some courses, if I recall,
mm-hmm.
Of the, I think it was like 200 that they looked at. If it's a correspondence school, it's not eligible for Title IV financial aid, and that's why they have to give back the $712.6 million.
Or at least the Office of Inspector General
yeah.
is recommending that they do so anyway.
Right. And that's a key point. It is a recommendation.
Mm-hmm.
It is not an order
mm-hmm.
or a fine.
Mm-hmm.
So it's actually up to the Secretary of Education to ultimately decide.
Mm-hmm.
And who knows? We're in a new federal administration right now that has different views mm-hmm. of regulations than the previous administration did, and nobody knows how this is going to turn out. Western governors is they're on it,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And my understanding is that they have their lobbyists in Washington. The school, if you don't know the history of Western governors, was founded by 19 governors in the West.
Hence the name.
Yeah. It's pretty descriptive. It's not like some sort of fly-by-night, diploma mill. So there is some juice coming from 19 governors in 19 different states that disagree, let's say, somewhat vehemently with
mm-hmm,
this finding.
Mm-hmm.
And I have my opinions, and I'm sure
mm-hmm,
you do too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess cutting to the chase with at least where we are today as we're recording, we can touch on some of the specifics, but it seems like within our field, the end result of the zeitgeist of kind of the reaction in online education is that the Department of Education should respond quickly and forcefully and reject that recommendation in order for things to move forward without potentially destructive consequences in higher education. Would you say that that's what you're seeing as the overriding message?
Well, I think that you and I probably suffer from a little selection bias when we're talking to people because we're all in it, and I'll show my cards. I think it's ridiculous.
Tell me what you really think.
Yeah, what the Department of Education has done. I've long admired Western Governor's model.
Yeah.
I think it's an interesting, innovative model, and I will give anybody credit who tries something new and actually has good results.
Yeah.
Now, I know that their graduation rate is probably less than they want it to be, but a lot of that has to do with the kinds of students that they're serving and the part-time nature of those students. But I know when you look at, like, for example, nursing certification tests, they do as well as anybody else, if not better than some places. So it's really hard to say they're not doing a good job at this and they're not instructing their students. And I think that's an interesting point, too, that adds, I think, to the ridiculousness of this, that the report that came from the Department of Education said, quote, "We did not assess whether the school's model was improving educational quality or expanding access to higher education."
Yep. I think that's a very important point.
Full stop.
Phil Hill brought that out in his analysis, and I thought that was very well observed, you know, that this is a quote.
Yeah. It's like, are you kidding?
If you're not looking at the outcomes,
right?
What are we even talking about?
So they went, what did he call it? You have it here.
A hyper-literal translation of ambiguous regulations leading to three findings, which he breaks down, summarizes. But yeah, hyper-literal
Amen. Testify, translation. Brother. That is absolutely true. I think it's crazy. It's a hyper-literal translation of these legacy regulations.
Yep.
And the way they define this substantive interaction, it has to be faculty-initiated.
Yes.
So if a student sends, an email to a faculty member and asks a question, that doesn't count.
Yes.
And I got to tell you, that makes me a little nervous, because if we had to count every interaction between a faculty member and a student, and we couldn't count one that was a student contacting a faculty member, you know, who knows how all of us would do under that kind of a strict review.
It's a very good point. I think it was WCET's New Frontiers blog. They've had a three-part analysis, I think mostly written by Russ Poulin, although I think, like you said, Van Davis contributed as well. In the first one of those, Russ comments that, yes, initiated by the faculty person and on a schedule set by the faculty person.
Right.
And so I know that even here in the state of Florida, we've had meetings before with our colleagues around the state, and we've heard from some of our sister and cousin institutions in the state of Florida that there are places that specify exactly, you know, you must, faculty, you must, which must and faculty, I really try not to use in the same sentence. You must, faculty, reach out to students every whatever hours, you know, 72, 48, 24, to that kind of that point, right?
I've seen those kinds of schedules. Obviously, we don't.
No, we don't.
But we do describe best practices for faculty, and it's part of our faculty training program, and there are expectations for faculty. And if they don't live up to some general best practices, then there are, you know, interventions and things that we do to address that. So I'm being a little facetious. I'm not really worried. I think it's a pretty harsh standard when you look at how Western Governors has designed their model, where they've disaggregated the faculty role into a couple of other roles, where there's these like mentors and a coach and an assessor. And then the Department of Education comes in and says, yeah, well, that one and that one, they don't count.
Right.
So the rest of these is all we're going to look at. And I don't want to speak for Western Governors.
Right.
But my understanding of their argument is you can't not look at all of that, because all of that is what is traditionally a faculty role, and it is having substantive interaction back and forth. And by the way, our creditor has said you guys are good, and now all of a sudden you're coming in and saying no. We're getting two different stories here. And not only have they said they're good, they said they're good for years and years and years.
Of course, which an accrediting body does look at
the quality.
Evidence of access and learning, and, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, minor details.
That's right.
Yeah.
And doesn't focus quite so much on maybe prohibitive definitions and ambiguous regulations and so forth. Also thought it was interesting the fact that within the last few years, there was apparently another audit, another institution, and nobody seems to know exactly how that all turned out. But it's interesting that this was not the first institutional audit like this.
No. As I understand now from doing a little more research on this case with WGU, St. Mary's of the Woods in Indiana had an audit and had a similar sort of finding and was recommended to repay millions.
42 million, something like that.
But nobody knows if they did or if they did how much of that they did. But the general feeling without any evidence is that they didn't pay that.
Yes. That seems to be the case. That seems to be the vibe or what people can find.
Yeah,
I don't know how you find lack of something, but maybe that's a challenge. But I guess it was all somewhat private.
Yeah. So if that's any sort of model, and maybe it's not because that was under a previous presidential executive administration.
That's true.
Maybe nothing
happens
with the WGU.
Maybe.
You know, maybe it just sits there as a recommendation that nobody ever acts on, or maybe it goes to the secretary who says no. Or maybe they make them pay back $712 million.
Okay, so let's can we be dystopian for a moment?
Sure.
So in the Edge Ventures analysis from in October. They use this metaphor of strong winds with a chilling effect, potentially, you know. So what about the chilling effect? What if the department said, okay, yeah, some either exactly what the recommendation or some facsimile thereof, yeah, you got to do stuff. And it maybe it leads to, I don't know, reorganization of the university or...
Well, let's just take... Let's not even go that dystopian. Let's just...
It's going to be crazy. Pull me back from the brink, Tom.
Because I think if that happens, it's really clear what the rest of us do.
Yeah, right? Run, hide.
Well, we just don't do that.
No,
we don't
right.
do that model, and we'd no. be very conservative in our approach, potentially.
Yes.
But let's just say that thing sits out there as a recommendation that never gets acted upon.
Ooh, that's a good one, too.
Well... I think that, and they don't say the Department of Education doesn't issue any sort of clarifying Dear Colleague letter or anything like that. I have to say, I would not in good conscience recommend any sort of a disaggregated faculty model for CBE here.
Right.
And I might tread very carefully in CBE in general, not knowing that at any given day this ruling could come down. So without clarity, I think we would... We might just put a lot of that stuff on ice until we know.
Yeah, so there's your chill.
Yeah.
And that's, I would say, from where I sit, that's a fairly balanced response to that kind of a hypothetical scenario. More fearful or more conservative kind of folks might take a giant step backwards from all manner of online technology-mediated blended.
$712.6 million gets your attention.
It does.
It's not like I have that in my pocket.
I mean, I think we and our listeners, I think for the most part, have a more nuanced read of technology-mediated higher education, but not everybody does. Not every institution, not every president and provost has that nuanced a read. And so, might have to fork over dollars. Step back from that.
Well, nobody can risk that kind of financial exposure knowingly.
No.
So, you know, as a public institution, we have to be good stewards of...
That's right.
And even as a private institution, which Western Governors is.
Yeah.
Again, I'll show my cards. I personally don't think they've done anything wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And my hope and expectation is this all gets resolved pretty quickly and we can all go back to trying to innovate and teach students in the most effective manner.
Right.
But, you know, who knows?
Yeah, and so just to note again what we're talking about here, hypothetical, right? Because we don't know at this point. Maybe our listeners are more in the know than we are, and so this is a little time capsule.
If Russ is listening, he knows.
That's right. But, you know, we'll see. But Russ, I think, in his part two analysis, the WCET New Frontiers blog, offered some sage advice. Mm-hmm. You know, what should we all do in our institutions? And the big picture advice is in the title of the posting, which is react, but don't overreact.
Yeah.
And just I thought he had some good breakout points of unlike the Office of Inspector General's recommendations, he says, well, we should all at our institutions keep the focus on improving learning.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, that's our business.
Yep.
And that's a good that's a good word,
I
think.
That's why we're here.
That's right.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if we go reacting crazily in a way that we don't do our best to help students learn, and I think that's why we're in this business of online education, right? We believe that there are, and there's evidence to support this, that there are practices in our technology-mediated space that have good things to accomplish for students in terms of their learning and access and other things.
I liked Russ's immediate reaction when this first broke. he put out a tweet. He had some commentary on it, but basically all I remember was he said, this is insane.
That's right.
Which was awesome. I was like, amen, brother. Yeah. Well, in the last one that actually, as we're recording this, just came out a couple days ago.
Yeah.
Van Davis talks about a history of regular and substantive interaction between faculty and students.
Right.
And he refers to it as a six-year-old operational definition of a week.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's right. I think what we are doing is trying to live in forward-looking 21st century technology-enabled pedagogical practices mm-hmm. As defined through early 20th century regulations that we're supposed to comply with. And oftentimes, those two things are in conflict with each other.
Yeah.
And I think there's probably no more egregious case than what's currently happening with Western governors.
Yeah, I mean, that's good. In that same piece, Van Davis asks this question, how do we walk the line between crafting regulatory language that ensures that the students enrolled in all forms of online education receive a high-quality education without stifling the very innovation that can improve student access and success?
Well, that is one that's been speculated. That's one of the potential outcomes of this whole thing, is that maybe they're going to update some of these regulations.
Right.
That would be a nice outcome. We'll see.
That would. And you know, on that note, maybe something of a of a self-serving plug, shout-out to our listeners that this whole episode today of this this example of the OIG's recommendations for WGU is sort of a follow-up to our recent episode on policy in online education, which was episode number 28, and an older episode on competency-based education. We did this overview, episode 6, and it's something of a follow-up to this episode that we did, number 25, on leading innovation in our space. You know, all of these threads are being woven together.
Yeah. And look at this. You do this thing monthly long enough, eventually you're going to start, you know, backtracking or crossing lines on the map.
It's all kind of
All right, so before we wrap it up, I guess if I looked at my cup full of M&Ms.
Which you've very carefully not chewed on
that's
the microphone.
That's one of my things. I can't deal with that. And I would not impose my chewing on anybody
that's
else.
That's right. So
what we're looking at is a disaggregated model of coffee.
That's right.
That is self-paced, right?
That's right. You're going to chew later.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And I will chew a lot. But I will still benefit from the quality M&M that I'm coffee that I'm enjoying.
That's right. So I don't know if this is a – honestly, I think Van Davis's question is a real good place to leave it. But I'm going to take a stab at kind of summarizing where I think we are and see if you agree.
Okay.
So definitions and goals are important in our work. We've talked about that before. We'll continue to talk about that for all kinds of reasons. But innovations in higher ed generally and online education specifically will require us to continue to at least think about – work on, work toward what it means for all kind of things, like, for instance, to be a faculty member, to be a student, what it means to interact, those two roles, faculty and students, what it means to interact, and what it means for students to learn. All that's on the table.
Yeah.
And we've got to be engaged in that dialogue and help inform decision makers and policy makers and all of that. What do you think?
Amen. I agree. You know, stay tuned because we're only in, I think, act one of this drama. So we may, if things develop, come back and talk some more about this in the future.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I don't think we gave the shout out, but and we'll have this in the show notes as well, but WGU has done a very nice job of framing out their response to these recommendations. I won't necessarily call it a rebuttal per se, but giving their own sort of side of the story and response, and that's worth a look rather than just reading the OIG recommendation or reading the community's response. It's good to see kind of how WGU responds.
Yeah, that's
as
a great point because obviously they disagree.
Yeah. How about that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, cool. I think that's maybe a good place to kind of wrap it up.
Mm-hmm.
So until next time, for TopCast, I'm Tom.
I'm Kelvin.
See ya.